I'm Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, man, children, women, girls, androgynous helpers of animals. Good morning to you, all of you people. Good morning, Mick Foley, who is my guest hostess today.
Thank you, Mark. It's a great morning, a great cold morning.
It's nice to see you, man.
Man, I appreciate the invite. My credibility has just skyrocketed. Air America's credibility has just plummeted.
Hey, wrestling fans are thrilled. Don't think there aren't liberal wrestling fans.
You know what? I received a call from a guy in Florida. I'm doing a big wrestling legends. I don't know if I qualify as a legend, but it's a legend.
You're a legend, man.
Thank you. And he said, hey, I heard you're co-hosting a radio show. You think you could mention the convention? And I said, I'm not sure that many wrestling fans are going to be tuning in.
Oh, no, man. When you were on last time, a lot of wrestling fans tuned in.
The type of wrestling fans who go to wrestling conventions, though?
I think so. I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily politically, you know, I think that wrestling is sort of apolitical in a way.
And it's true, yeah. Even though the show skews a little to the right, I think the people who make up the audience are a diverse bunch.
Well, we were just talking about that. Because I didn't grow up with wrestling. I might want to mention though, Mark Riley, my normal co-host, is in England. So don't panic.
Okay. You know, when I heard I was coming in, they said that Mark Riley's on vacation. I thought, are you sure it's not Mark Maron? I knew Riley was the wrestling fan, but I'm
learn though. The thing is, like, my recollection of wrestling when I was a kid, one thing I do remember is that I grew up in New Mexico, and I remember seeing wrestling.
That's my phantom hometown.
Is that true?
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
How does that work, Phantom Hometown?
You know what? It was my first match. I was in Clarksburg, West Virginia.
How long ago?
This was 20 years ago,
okay,
or 19
dude,
years ago.
Who was the guy that used to host New Mexico Wrestling? He was a short little guy. He had, like, gray hair. He combed it back, a little goatee. And he was really kind of a mousy dude.
Man,
I think his name was, like, Jack London for some reason.
That could be. That rings a bell. Back then, things were regionally based, so I wouldn't be aware of what was going on in New Mexico.
So it was like wrestling barnstorming? I mean,
they were regional territories. And one time, there was, like, 26 territories. So a guy would, you know, he'd do his stint in the old WWWF in the Northeast, then he'd head either to Florida or Texas. There was a lot more people making a living, but no one was making the big living like a guy.
So it was like a cabaret circuit that guys had regional followings?
I never quite compared it to a cabaret, but it could be, yeah.
A burlesque, a circus. But whatever the case was, is that you guys, there were plenty of guys who were out there doing wrestling that no one knew except for people within that region.
Exactly. And you might read about them in the wrestling magazines that so-and-so George Steele is on a tear
in
the Northeast.
That's what I just remember in the wrestling magazines. All I remember is when I was a kid and we used to go down to Skaggs Drugstore. All right, down the mall, down the street from where I live, there were two kinds of magazines that always freaked me out when I was like 8. There was the wrestling ones, because back then, on the cover of the wrestling
magazine, there was blood on every cover.
There was always guys, like bald guys, spattered with blood. Everybody was just covered in blood. And then there were the True Detective magazines, were the other ones, where, you know, it was just pictures of murder.
So we were
people.
In good company, right?
Oh, man,
the bloody wrestlers and the murder victims.
Most kids, you know, healthy kids, were looking at, you know, trying to look at Playboys and Penthouse. So I'm looking at dead bodies and True Detectives and guys covered in blood with no hair. What happened to the blood?
It's still around. As a matter of fact, you know, I've had my share of, I guess, kind of gruesome matches. You know, they were not, you know, they were the minority of the matches, but the fans always seemed to hand me these pictures of me looking like those guys in the covers. I remember when I lived in Atlanta, you know, I had a me wall, and it was the me bloody wall.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine from college coming to visit, and she walked through the basement. It was like, what the heck happened to that guy? Like, every picture of me. And those days are over. Now, there's a very few. There's a picture of me and Katie Couric together. That's the only me.
And she's covered in blood. Which is really, it's a hard picture to find, but maybe Mick will put it on the website. But was it, come on, dude, was it real blood?
I've had a lot of stitches along the way, you know. I mean,
I
experimented with a blood capsule one time. That'll be my shocking confession. But
one time,
yeah, I was known as a guy that I led with my face, and I ended up in. I had many a late night emergency room visit.
See, there's something just nagging at me now, though, because that I didn't grow up with wrestling. It was not something I was necessarily into. Is that, you know? So when you get hurt, Is that a surprise? I mean, because I'm assuming that a lot of this stuff is fairly well dictated. I'm not going to say staged.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. Fairly well dictated. Yeah.
But, you know, so when something that happens, you know, is it like, you know, how the hell did this go wrong?
What you accept that there's going to be injuries along the way. And the ironic thing, I think, is that wrestling, you know, being the fake sport, is the only one that continues when one of the combatants is knocked unconscious.
Uh-huh.
You know? There was a famous or maybe infamous match I had called the Hell in a Cell, in which the top of the cell structure gave way, which was a complete surprise to me, and I ended up taking a real bad fall about 13 feet to the old canvas, which was the canvas wasn't harder, but the ring itself had a lot less give than the current ones do. And it knocked me out, and in a legitimate sport, obviously that would be the end of the contest. And instead, you had like 10 guys hit the ring and try to buy me time. And then when I finally came to, we continued the match. But the guys pride themselves in making the best out of bad situations, and every once in a while, bad situations do arise.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. We tipped the when we did that bit here. We finally just over the last week on our best of, we told people what really happened, and there were people out there on our blog and whatnot. They're like, I can't believe I fell for that. that was
you know what?
Well,
I mean, I try to stay away from wrestling type stuff. Like, I remember not the being on the old Roseanne show was anything to brag about. But the fact is, they wanted me to come in and take off my shirt, hit a muscle pose. I was like, you've never seen me without my shirt on, have you? I'm not the type of guy that hits poses. So I try to stay away from that stuff. But I have to admit, when the first time I heard that, they want you to go on and do this wrestling skit, I was like, do I have to? And then they laid it out for me. I was like, that sounds good.
It sounded so good, man.
And I got to come in with a couple of liberal statements about, tell me every kid deserves an equal opportunity.
It
was good.
I want to talk more about some of the wrestling stuff that you do politically. After this, I want to, I think we should also do the news and talk about, there's still, I mean, the tsunamis is probably one of the greatest, international disasters we've seen, in my lifetime, and natural disasters. And if you want to help the victims of the tsunami in Asia, you can go to the links page at morningsedition.com to see what you can do. The death toll is up around 25,000 people. It's almost too big for me to even imagine in my head what is going on over there. And, of course, the United States has pledged, $15 million, which
like
seems paltry.
Yeah,
and hopefully maybe by the end of the week we'll be able to get somebody on the air from a relief organization to talk about just how those things, how funds and services are distributed in a crisis like this. But when we come back, we'll begin to address Bin Laden's new tape, supposedly Bin Laden's new tape, some Iraq stuff, your trip to Iraq, Mick, and a lot of other good stuff coming up here on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason on Air America Radio.
Fire truck! 19 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. With me, my special guest host is Mick Foley, three-time World Wrestling Entertainment Champion and two-time New York Times best-selling author. His most recent book is a children's book, Tales from Rescal Lane, and his book, Titan Brown, is available in paperback now. You can get those on morningsedition.com. The characters that you created as a wrestler are Mankind?
Mankind, yeah. Cactus Jack, and I don't like to talk about Dude Love all that much. That was a child...
That was what?
Well, it was a creation of mine, when I was a teenager. That was who I was going to be. And then nature didn't quite cooperate with me. And somewhere along the line, Vince McMahon found out about this fantasy idea and decided to make it reality. So the idea, it seemed cooler for a 17-year-old picking up the chicks and being eye candy as opposed to, like, the beaten-up 33-year-old guy dancing in tie-dye at about 295.
Well, that's kind of a genius thing on McMahon's part to sort of set you up like that.
I'd actually have women, My wife even got to play a groupie one time. Where it was like an inside joke, and girls would pelt me with undergarments and come in and jump all over me. So
Well, it's amazing how people play along. You know, when I go on the road, Nick, you know, I got about a half a house of people that, you know, and 20 of them are usually resistant to my charm. But so I think a lot of our listeners might be wondering, if they aren't wrestling fans or they don't know, you know, the type of work you do outside of wrestling, you know, why is Mick Foley on Air America? And you know, it's a question that I think we need to answer.
It's a valid question. You know what? I think I really benefited from retiring fairly young. At 34, you know, I was essentially done as a full-time wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
But I continued to travel around, you know, making appearances, and I got involved in it with a lot of different charitable groups, either, you know, World Relief efforts or groups that dealt with kids who were not doing too well, with mm-hmm. Make-A-Wish and Marty Lyons Foundation and things like that. And I found that once the attention was not completely on me and my career,
yeah.
that I was able to look around and see, you know, how messed up
right.
the world and the country were. And I think especially when you deal with kids, you know, who have life-threatening illnesses, you realize, man, our healthcare system's in rough shape, because unfortunately I meet kid after kid and parent after parent, and the story is almost the same story with a few, you know, a few different details. It's either the mother, you know, who's had to take a lesser job just to qualify for benefits so that, you know, the you know,
her family could be covered.
Exactly. Or
yeah.
it's a mother who's been told point blank, look, you've either got to you have to choose between being a parent or a worker. You can't have both. And in some cases, you know, it's also just a family that's been devastated, you know, when the bills come in. And I had one boy who just recently died. I got to know real well. And the drugs he had to take forced his body, you know, his body swelled up to where he was almost 200 pounds.
Mm.
And his family was not able to get an apartment with a ground floor. So he had a dad who was on disability, a mom, you know, who was getting up in age. And they had to somehow get this kid out of his wheelchair and up a flight of stairs. And I just saw the way they were living. It was just, you know, real bad conditions. I went over their house one day, and there were boxes all over the place.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, what are you guys doing? They said, we're moving. And I said, oh, how come? And they said they missed, their parents had missed one month's payment on the bottom floor, and they were given 10 days to get out. And I said, didn't you explain the, you know, the conditions,
yeah.
circumstances? She said, we explained it, and the judge said, you have 10 days. And it just seemed like such a shame. And I thought, you know, I'd been given a chance, you know, to be in contact with a lot of people from all walks of life, people who actually look forward to talking to me or are not afraid to tell me their viewpoints about anything. And, this is like
a societal problem, that there are like somewhat like 45 million people who are uninsured. There are people that are unable to get life insurance. Now, corporations are starting to cut back on their coverage of individuals within, you know, their workforce. And it's left to the entire healthcare industry is put, you know, in the hands of the HMOs, who are free to jack up prices whenever they want.
Now, I don't mean to bite the hand that feeds you, but I was covered under AFTRA.
Yeah.
And then 1 year I didn't do a whole lot of radio work.
Right.
So I received a letter telling me that my coverage was being eliminated because I hadn't made enough money to qualify for the coverage, but they did offer to give me lesser benefits, COBRA.
For like a fortune.
So I pay three times as much and I receive less benefits. So it hits home. It hits home everywhere. Another thing I want to mention,
yeah,
I was listening to Air America during the Republican convention.
Yep.
I think I was listening to Morning Sedition, and you had someone on talking about the Poor People's March that was taking place in
New York. We were bunkered in at the Republican convention. It was kind of wild, because when we were there, it was like 5 in the morning, and no one was there but
right,
the cleaning crew
right, yeah.
and Bill Bennett.
You were there at the Garden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I was listening, and
yeah.
I thought, you know what, I've been trying to stand up for, you know, people who are not doing so well in this country, and I thought, you know, if this convention passes by and the marches and I don't take place in something, I'm going to regret it. So I kind of hopped in and I walked into the Poor People's March. I didn't know the guys I were walking with were undercover cops. They told me like a half an hour into the march, they're like, you know, we can't lie to you, we're undercover. And so I was the safest guy around. I had four policemen around me. But where I have the benefit is that everywhere we stop, like every couple blocks, you have to stop.
Right.
And there were obviously a lot of police. The guys were out in force. And I'm the only guy who was able to walk by to 50 policemen and say, hey, how do you feel about this assault weapons ban being lifted? So
right.
at the end of the march, not only did I realize that my views were not as radical as I thought, I was like the conservative of that march, you know?
yeah.
But, I got a couple hundred, real honest opinions on how police officers felt about the assault weapons ban.
And what did they feel, Jeff?
Yeah, they weren't so happy about the lifting of the ban.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, I'm not an expert in a lot of different places in politics,
yeah.
But I think I do have a voice, that I can express.
It's very interesting that the point you made, you know, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you do have a elevated celebrity profile, and the type of the following that you have as a wrestler, you know, is definitely going to be, you know, to speak to that particular group of people is not, they are sort of not necessarily spoken to politically very often in a way that's sort of enlightening or in a way that's
Yeah, liberal. I think I represent a lot of people who are voting against their better interests.
That's what blows me away. And what you were talking about before is your own career, that, you know, when, because you have, on both sides of it, you have people who are completely self-involved, who are making money, who forget about what's really going on in the country because they're okay.
Right.
And then
right.
you have people who are completely consumed in what they have to do just to survive. And both of those type of people are sort of oblivious to politics a lot of times.
Yeah. And I think the first time I was on the show, I made reference to the kid who didn't have enough to eat and his father assuring him, hey, don't worry about it. At least those gay people will never meet, can't get married.
Right.
And did that become a serious wedge issue and really shone a light on the way that a lot of people think in the country.
What's interesting now is the way we're trying to talk about the Christo-fascist zombie brigades of the neocon death cult are essentially that they are an ideological minority in the country, and that these wedge issues are not, they're not moral issues. What they are really, you know, they're human rights issues, and they're civil rights issues, being the issue of choice and the issue of freedom for gay people to be involved in long-term,
right.
Contracts, marriages, civil unions, and that, like, a lot of that stuff is just so, you know, put out into the culture, but it represents a very small group of people. It really does, ultimately, you know, ideologically, and the information that comes out of the extreme religious right, it is a minority. They aren't moral issues. They are restrictions on people's freedoms, you know, that are really the interests of a small group of people that this administration is pandering to.
Yeah, and I think the best interests of a lot of people, like you mentioned, 45 million people without health insurance, I think the figure in poverty is up to somewhere around 30 million is being overlooked. I'd really like the next election to focus more on those people and less on the wedge issues, but conservative friends will probably see to it that that's not the case.
Yeah, I know. Economic issues, it's unbelievable about how people vote against their economic interests now. I don't know what they're thinking. I think they're thinking that this guy will eventually bring on the apocalypse and they can all go home. But we're going to talk about the news when we come back. We've got Bin Laden. We've got your trip to Iraq that I want to hear about. So stay with us here on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's 28 past the hour.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron, and I am here with Mick Foley, who is guest hosting for Mark Riley, who is on vacation in England until next week, taking the long break. We've been talking, it's amazing, I'm sitting here over the break watching Kalo on the board pulls up on the internet an action figure of my guest host Mick Foley, and Brendan McDonald is in here. You know, PW is like sitting there like, oh, I don't have that one. Maybe I need to get that one.
Mark Riley have his own bone crunching buddy?
What about me? Where's my action figure? Where's what would I call myself? I don't know. Self-hating neurotic Jew, where I actually get into the ring and just beat myself up. Has that been done, Nick? Where, like, a guy comes to wrestle me, I'm like, no, I got it covered. And I just beat myself up.
Yeah, I took a pretty good beating for several years, but I don't think it had anything to do with the self-hating you spoke of.
Yeah? I don't know. Sometimes I just...
You know, my 4-year-old, we were talking about him before one of
yeah,
the air. He's just learning now what I used to do for a living. But up until that point, he would walk around with my figure, and he just thought every dad has an action figure. You
yeah.
know, there was nothing special about me. I just had an action figure like every dad does.
It's a dad doll. That's all. It's my dad doll. So let's try and get into the news here. Bin Laden or somebody, a voice Oh, yeah. I got to do the... oh, there he is. Okay. Ramon just dropped off the Palm Pilot on blue paper today. I don't know if that's official or what. He was wearing a Russian military hat, Chris?
Weird.
I don't know what it was. But here is Viktor Yushchenko's Palm Pilot for today. Oh, okay. 6 a.m. Wake up. Have dog taste breakfast. 6:30 a.m. Bury dog. 7 a.m. Make own breakfast. 8 a.m. Call Putin. Assure him that despite our differences, Ukraine will always be ready to help Russia screw Muslims out of their oil. 9 a.m. Watch Scarface DVD again to get management tips. 11 a.m. Field calls from Russian film directors asking me to become the Ukrainian Bill Murray. Note the early funny Bill Murray. All right. 12 noon, first order of corruption. Take part in lucrative ad campaign for chemical industry. Dioxin. You'll get cancer, but you may become president. Nothing. 1 p.m. Appoint security czar. Note, not an expression. He will be an actual czar. Hello. Czar, Russian czar from the old days. Here we go. 2 p.m. Pay off Russian mob to thank them for only half killing me. 8 p.m. Go out. Forage for roots and nuts. Drink only spring water. Trust no one. All right. You know, it was good. We were all on the same page towards the beginning of that bit, and then something happened.
The cancer jokes run a little thin after the disfigurement. Yeah, it's funny for a while.
Where were you brought up where cancer's not funny? Oh, my God. You know, anyways, here we go. So Bin Laden supposedly released an audio tape saying that he backs Jordanian-born militant Abu Musab al-Zarqawi as the al-Qaeda network's leader in Iraq. Now, that's sort of bad news, Mick, in a lot of ways, that there is an actual alliance taking place between these two. There's a quote here from Bin Laden, supposedly Bin Laden, quote, anyone who takes part in these elections is an infidel. That's a quote about the elections and then about Zarqawi. Quote, the brothers in the group there must listen to him and obey him for what is good, end quote. This is supposedly Bin Laden creating a cabinet appointment of Zarqawi, who was always assumed to be with al-Qaeda, but this sort of confirms it. And this on top of the two suicide bombings that took place. There was an attack on an attempt on the life of a guy named Abdul Aziz Hakim, who heads the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. He's regarded as the leading contender for the votes of the Shiites from a slate of 228 candidates within the Unified Iraqi Coalition. So it's assumed that Baathists, that renegade Baathists who are within the insurgency, took out a hit on this guy. Now, the problem with this now is that the Sunnis, the whole Sunni contingency within the political movement in Iraq, has pulled out. So what is sort of seeming to happen, in my eyes, is that they may be moving towards a civil war. This could be a declaration of civil war. And with Zarqawi and Bin Laden united in a sort of either metaphorical relationship or an actual relationship, and the Baathists, who are part of the insurgency, sort of kind of pulling out with the other Sunnis,
sure,
that there could be, you know, a real, you know, civil war that is going to unfold there. Now, you were with the troops recently.
Yes, I was just there last week.
And in your idea or in your feelings about, you know, what was your experience in dealing with these guys? Because I have to assume that with the suicide bombers and with the insurgency not necessarily getting any weaker and with them not knowing where the next hit's going to come from, and these guys are still obviously, you know, building momentum, what is the morale? What was your experience with them?
Well, you know what? It's strange because the morale was actually very good when I was there. That may be partially because we were there. And,
right.
And we were in a lot of what they call FOBs, forward operating bases, that most entertainers do not venture out to. So we're real, you know, in some remote locations where they don't get a whole lot of entertainment. And we were also dealing with troops who either were leaving within a couple of months or troops who were just entering and therefore, you know, were somewhat excited about the venture. I mean, I will say that these guys believe in the mission. In that sense, it's not like Vietnam and that you have a lot of people wondering why they're there. I think that would change immediately if there was a draft. And again, I'm sure that there's a lot more soul searching going on than we saw. We saw a lot of people, you know, who said, hey, you know, we're sure we miss home, but we realize we have a job to do. And we did get the sense that there was progress being made. We were able to fly over the country. We hit 10 bases in 3 days. So we were really moving via Black Hawk. And you got to see how the people in the country lived. And first of all, you develop a real appreciation for what kind of guy Saddam Hussein was when you realize he built almost 100 palaces and left most of his country to live in mud huts, you know. And Iraq's not a very diverse geographic area. We were not up in the north, so I can't speak for the Kurds, but it just seemed like the same area over and over, mud hut after mud hut and sheep farmers. And
within the larger cities, certainly within Baghdad, there, you know, there was definitely an infrastructure in a city.
No doubt. And the closest we got to a city, we were right outside Tikrit, and we were right on the front lines there in Samarra. So, you know, I went out there as close as you can get on patrol and was able to look through the binoculars, and you still saw smoke on the horizon. What I was saying is I think the mood, or was trying to get to, the mood would have been a lot different had I been there 2 days later when the disaster in Mosul struck. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine what those guys are thinking every time they see, you know, an Iraqi contractor. Because obviously if we're going to put that country together in any sense, the Iraqis have to play a major part, a much more major part than they have been playing. And we saw the Iraqi contractors everywhere. And I can only speak for myself, but I would have been certainly worried. You know, I mean, that's a part of the, you know, the essence of terrorism is that you don't know who the enemy is.
And, yeah, it's interesting to me that, you know, that I guess that morale, in the sense that you were saying it's different than Vietnam, and in the sense that, you know, that people understand that it's their job. What I wonder is that... That is sort of what they believe in the sense that they are with their troops, they are with their forces, they take care of each other. But, I mean, I wonder about the patriotic element. Do they think that the reason they are there is justified?
I was talking more about morale. I mean, I didn't want to be the guy disturbing it. It's bad enough that I was like the lone liberal on the group. I was hoping not to be outed in front of the troops, you know. It makes it liberal, you know.
Really?
A little bit. I mean, I did admit on the air they had me talk on you know, one of their, I guess, military stations, and I said, you know, that I was a Democrat and wasn't altogether you know, thrilled about how things had taken shape, but that I was encouraged by, you know, the attitude of the troops.
You didn't find any liberal thinking troops, because it seems to me that there are people that there is. There is dissent within the troops. I mean, we talk to guys all the time, you know, on our call-in segments. And tomorrow, we're having a guy come in that you're going to be able to talk to, this guy Paul Rykoff, who's the executive director of Operation Truth. To get into some of the political feelings and the way the troops are being treated over there. But you didn't get any sense that.
You know, my job was not to go over there and get into their heads.
Right.
You know, I mean,
you were there to entertain.
But you know, I was able to have several conversations, especially with guardsmen and women, about their situation and whether or not they ever imagined they'd be overseas. And uniformly, the answer was no way.
Right.
You know, maybe it was in the fine print, but these people did not bargain for that. So something that bothered me. I remember watching Meet the Press, where Tim Russert was interviewing Zell Miller, and he asked about, "Hey, what about these, you know, guardsmen?" He gave.
Let's have a duel.
He didn't challenge. He didn't challenge Tim. Tim's tough on the duel. But Zell said, "Hey, I talked to those troops, and they're proud to serve their country." And my feeling was, and this was verified by talking to him, you know what? It's not a black and white issue. You can be proud to serve your country and also frustrated as hell that you're away from your family for a year. And that's the feeling that I did get, and people did verify that.
I guess I'm obviously not going to come up to you and go, "Mick, you got to get me out of here. Here, help me out." You know, I'm in trouble. You're a wrestler. You know people. Help me out. I can wrestle. Get me out of here. Look, I could be the, you know, I'm the Marine. That's what I'll be. I'll be the Marine.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to Paul tomorrow, because I would have loved to have heard those opinions, but I don't think the troops believe that they, you know, that was their job to talk to me about that. And in that case, it wasn't my job to get that type of information out of there.
Yeah, I'm glad you went over there, and I guess you're. I wonder if you did. You see Franken? Did you run into Franken?
Franken was going there the next day. As a matter of fact, one of our wrestlers is a real staunch conservative, but a friend of Franken.
He wanted to wrestle Franken.
No, he likes Franken.
No, thank you.
But he was leaving our Armed Forces Entertainment tour, going directly to the USO tour. So those guys didn't get home until late Christmas Eve. They went out, into Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, and, you know, I believe Al's in a little different situation, because everybody there knows his political affiliation, but likes him anyway.
Yeah.
And I think the troops, you know, the ones I've met, and I've met a lot of injured soldiers, and that will I'll talk about that when we talk about my dinner with Wolfie. I believe we're gonna
next hour dinner with Wolfowitz.
A lot of the injured troops know my political affiliation, and they don't care. They just care that that I care about them as people, and I found that a lot of the volunteers do lean liberal. And they do have a deep caring for these guys.
Most people are secretly liberal. They just don't realize that. We'll be back in a second. We're going to talk a little bit about the failings in Homeland Security and the failings in intelligence in relation to Iraq and more with Mick Foley and myself. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Fifty-one past the hour. I am Mark Maron,
the self-hater.
Yeah, that's Mick Foley.
I hate you too.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's catching.
I know only I can hate me. I don't actually hate myself. Sometimes I do, but you know, everyone does. Mick Foley is with me. He is guest hosting today and tomorrow. Mark Riley is on vacation in England for reals. Mick Foley, if you don't know, three-time World Wrestling Entertainment champion and two-time New York Times best-selling author. Who else can say that? And also, several action figures of Mick Foley. Mark Maron, the self-hater, no action figures.
That's a resume that's tough to beat, right?
It is, man.
Championships,
you've done some stuff. Yeah.
Action figures.
I've done 32 Conan O'Brien appearances.
Have you really?
Yeah. In many different haircuts over many different years. And I'll give you a big tape. Maybe I'll give you one of my CDs. I wrote a book. It wasn't a bestseller, but I wrote one.
Well, you know, I know how that feels. I have a current book that's not a bestseller.
Well, what, the kids' book?
Kids' book is having a little trouble. But it's when I speak to kids at schools, I let them know that, hey, you know, my important message is that you shouldn't let other people define what being a success is. And I point out writing the books. So I've had three children's books, two which were bestsellers, and one.
It's a book called "Don't Be Afraid to Fail."
The book itself is about bullying and
accepting.
It's done in rhyme, so it's a fun book.
And I said
the third book I wrote is the best of the three.
Yeah.
And it didn't sell as well. I can't afford to consider the book a failure because it didn't do as well as the bestsellers.
Well, no, I was talking about the theme of the book was don't let anyone judge your success. And
I'm not that heavy. I'm a wrestler, man. Okay. Yeah, come on.
I spend a lot of time in my head, Mick. A lot of time up here. So here we go. This is an interesting story. This guy, Clark Kent Irvin, who served as the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General until earlier this month. He was appointed by President Bush in December 2003, and he's out of the job now. In December 8th, he's out of a job, and he doesn't know if he's going to be restaffed over there.
He may be replaced by Bruce Wayne Johnson.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly. Bad, right?
Well, whoever, if they're only taking applicants who have capes of some kind. But the government agency responsible for protecting the nation against terrorist attacks is a dysfunctional, poorly managed bureaucracy that has failed to plug serious holes in the nation's safety net. The Department of Homeland Security's former internal watchdog, Mr. Clark Kent Irvin, warns, quote, there are still all these security gaps in the country that have yet to be closed. He said it's chaotic and disorganized. And we all knew this, that this was not this bureaucracy was created to funnel money through. And, you know, the list of transgressions and failures is pretty mind-blowing. And apparently, while in office, Irvin made some scathing findings. He reported one that undercover investigators were able to sneak explosives and weapons past security screeners at 15 airports during tests in 2003. Two federal air marshals hired to provide a last line of defense against terrorists on airlines swept on the job, tested positive for alcohol or drugs while on duty, lost their weapons, and falsified information in 2002. Three, department leaders should have taken a more aggressive role in efforts to combine the government's myriad terrorist watch lists since the department was created in 2003. Four, the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, gave executive bonuses of $16,477 to 88 of its 116 managers in 2003, an amount one-third higher than the bonuses given to the executives at any other federal agency. For what? I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing to me that they build these things. This is supposed to be the Republicans who are for lesser government, and they build this sort of bloated bureaucracy that's ineffective, and they just funnel money. Whose money? Our money. It's unbelievable, Mick. And here, the department complained that many of Irvin's reports were based on outdated information. How outdated could it be? The guy's only been there for a year. I mean, it's 2003.
Wait. In their defense, though, it's not as if all the money is poorly spent, because here it says the Transportation Security Administration spent $1,500 for three cheese displays.
Yeah, $500,000 on an awards banquet for employees, awarding them for what? Hey, we didn't do anything again. Go team! They can still sneak through. Have some more $1,500 cheese. Unbelievable. The hypocrisy in this administration, it just sort of, it's mind-blowing to me. It never ends either, Mick. That's what I'm telling you. Listen to the papers ruffle. So, again, and also there's another issue of problems within the intelligence community, because counterterrorism agencies are shopping for talent at job fairs. Apparently, like all the agencies, like the FBI, the CIA, the counterintelligence, they compete over who gets what guy. That the apparently there's a limited amount of people that are able to do the type of work that they need, which is primarily translate Arabic, you know, infiltrate Arabic speaking, you know, cells and whatnot. And they're looking for anybody that will be willing to do this type of work, and they can't seem to get any takers. So if you are somebody who speaks Arabic and is willing to work for one of the counterterrorism agencies, this might be your lucky year. Let me see what this says. There's no consensus across the nation's 15 intelligence agencies where staffing needs are the most acute, but few dispute that many more analysts are needed, particularly in the departments and agencies created since September 11, 2001. The nearly two-year-old Homeland Security Department is a prime example. But that thing might just go bankrupt.
Fortunately, we've got Bernie Kerik on our side.
Oh, my God. That guy, boy, they just piled on that dude. Bernie Kerik. Having sex in an apartment meant for police people to take breaks during the cleanup of 9/11. Unbelievable. Here we go. Liberal agenda for today. Barbara Streisand's compound just sent this. One, with detachment and honesty, review the events of 2004, then take a Vicodin with a big glass of Chardonnay, which is now called a Carlin, officially. Two, criticize movie of the Phantom of the Opera for being insufficiently gay. Three, pitch action reality show set in Iraq called Pimp My Dangerously Unprotected Humvee. Four, before dumping Christmas tree onto the sidewalk, tell it's not you, it's me. Five, today's phrase is dropping the conversation. You know where all that tinsel goes, man. Straight into the ocean, buddy. It's a total dolphin killer. Wake up, man. Wake up. All right, we'll be back in the next hour with more of me and Mick Foley. We got the Dream Diary coming up. We got Kenneth Davis, the historian, to let us know how that works. Rick Harris is coming later in the hour. We're going to talk to Mick about his dinner with Wolfowitz. 58 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, socialists, anarchists that want to laugh, adolescents, and wrestling fans. My guest host this morning, of course, the legendary Mick Foley, three-time World Wrestling Entertainment champion and two-time New York Times best-selling author. Good morning, Mick. You doing all right?
Man, I'm having a great time here. I'm wondering what the feedback is from the people, and whether or not my views on Iraq and the positive things I did see are, you know.
We're going into hour two, and Mick's getting a little insecure. He's starting to buckle. I can see it. I can hear it in his voice.
I don't want them hating me. They said, hey, good work's being done over there. I'm like, sure they wanted a gloomier picture.
All right, so shoot something down the blog there at sedition, morningsedition.com. Let Mick know how he's doing.
Just being around you, Mark, I'm hating myself. I came in. I felt good. Self-loathing.
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 That's hilarious. You know, our intern comes
comes in, asks if you want to eat something to eat, and Mick just goes, yeah, a protein bar of some kind. Of course you eat protein bars. You're a professional
wrestler.
There's
a comeback. You know, I dropped a lot of weight last year for my first match in 4 years,
yeah.
And I may do it again, so it's that time of year I need to drop some weight.
Really? Now, how do you drop weight generally?
I'm
a food obsessed person. I'm like a man girl.
You know what? I get off the couch and I start exercising more, eating less, the old fashioned way.
Yeah. I personally, what I do is I freak out to the point, I actually think that I might be able to burn off calories if I just freak myself out so much because I'm getting fat. Like, you ever just sit there and go, what the hell's wrong with me? Look at me, I'm a disaster, and get your heart rate up. You ever do that?
No.
Oh, man. Well, here, let me share some more of myself with you. Oh, by the way, I want to put this out there. The tsunami relief information we have on morningsedition.com can tell you, you know, what you can do to help, where you can go to be of assistance in one of the, you know, certainly one of the largest natural disasters of my lifetime. The body counts are going up, and there's going to be a lot of need that needs to be filled. So you can go there to morningsedition.com to see how you can get involved. Hopefully by the end of the week we're going to get somebody on to talk about how that works, how relief dispersal works, where that money goes, and what's happening. And now shifting gears again, Mick Foley, I'm going to share some of my inner workings with you right now. This is something we call the Dream Diary, which I write down every morning after I wake up to bring to my therapist once a week who I haven't seen in 3 weeks and I'm going crazy. So here's last night. I'm at a club and it's dark and crowded and the music is pumping, only it's Ashley Simpson, so the music is pumping badly. For some reason, it smells awful in there, really rank and nasty, not just the usual sweaty, funky smell. I wrap duct tape around my nose. There are people everywhere that I recognize, only they're vaguely greenish and are bleeding some sort of steaming goo, and their flesh is rotting right off the bone like rancid gyro meat. There's the Swift Boat guys playing keep away with somebody's leg, and Bernie Kerik getting a lap dance from a woman with no lap, and Zell Miller screaming at the bartender until he coughs up a lung, and O'Reilly scrubbing off his nose with a loofah, and Bush and Cheney and Rove and Condi and Laura and Rupert Murdoch are shrieking and babbling and having their goo sponged off by chattering little goo monkeys, and they're all having the time of their lives. I'm kind of freaked out, and I'm pretty sure my shoes are ruined. Everything just keeps getting louder and louder. My eardrums are starting to shred. I've got to do something. So I throw open these huge red velvet curtains and let the sunlight stream in. All of a sudden, the music stops and everyone screams in horror in the light, and all the neocons melt like a box of crayons under a laser beam. The floor looked like a pollock. When all the zombie guts had been slurped up with the wet vacuum, I went to the men's room, washed my hands, cleaned off my shoes, splashed on a little Paco Rabanne, popped the peppermint into my mouth, and tipped the attendant $20. The place was empty and clean. I walked outside into the sunshine, alone. It's going to be a good year. I woke up, and my bed was filled with Darjeeling. How do you like that?
That's weird. Weird.
Yeah. Well, you see tomorrow's. I got a feeling just spending the morning with you is going to generate some good ones. I'm going to have like some sort of, I know, something's going to happen. So this next guest, you actually know.
We have history.
You have a history with him. He's Kenneth Davis. He's the author of the best-selling book, Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. We're going to get him on the phone here in a second, but why don't you share the moment there, the history that you have.
Sure, yeah. One of the great things about co-hosting here is I was offered the opportunity to create my dream list of guests. So I had four guests listed, and two of them will be on the show, Kenneth C. Davis today, Samantha Power tomorrow. And Ken Davis is my favorite historian. I think his books, his Don't Know series, are wonderful, makes learning fun. And I ended up trapping him at the big authors get-together. I was a HarperCollins author a few years ago. Had a couple drinks because I was a little tentative about being in the company of other esteemed, esteemed authors. And somehow they ended up almost having to drag me away from Kenneth Davis because, you know, we really engaged in conversation. Uh-huh. At least I was engaged in hammering him with questions.
Yeah.
And so I asked him to be my lifeline when I was a contestant on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Went off the air with $125,000. This was for the Police and Fire Widows and Orphans Fund. And I felt really good. Like I was visualizing that million. And I felt really good about it. I came in the next day. They hit me with a question. Which of the following as one of the Society Islands, and it was like Tonga, Fiji, Tahiti, and Bora Bora.
Uh-huh.
And I just drew a complete blank, and Regis says, you wouldn't happen to have a... That's a horrible Regis imitation. You wouldn't happen to have a geography expert, would you? And all of a sudden, like a light bulb went on in my mind. I said, as a matter of fact, I do. He said, well, tell me about him. I said, yeah. He knows everything that has ever happened
anywhere
in the history of the world.
Yeah.
They gave him the question, and he goes, well, I don't know that one. And my heart just sank. I left, you know, with the 125 grand, and like a week later, my publicist calls up, and she said, I don't know if he wants me saying this. She goes, Ken Davis is devastated. Because he had missed the question, so I ended up calling him, and... you know, that was a rough time him, missing the question.
This could be sort of a touching sort of conversation.
Either that or it'll be another disaster along the lines of the last time we were on the air together.
Well, Ken's other books are Don't Know Much About the Bible and Don't Know Much About the Civil War. He's with us today on the phone. Good morning, Ken Davis. How are you?
Good morning. He had to bring up my absolute, the low point of my entire career. He had to bring that up.
Your one big moment, man.
Well, no, I had another big moment, another big millionaire moment, actually, and this happened more recently. It's kind of interesting, and it's sort of the opposite of the story. I was asked to be one of the wise men by the show recently when they did Who Wants to Be a Super Millionaire.
Oh, really?
And we were sort of stuck in this basement cavern, and people who got to a certain level could then use us as a lifeline. We were three people. One was a previous winner of $1 million. One was a person from People magazine, so he's pop culture, and I was there as a historian. And they asked us a history question, and I gave the right answer, and the other two people gave the wrong answer, and the contestant didn't take my answer, but took the other guy.
She didn't go with the historian. Maybe she'd seen our episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
That's
the guy who didn't know what the Society Islands were. By the way, it was Tahiti, I found out later.
Exactly, exactly. And Ken, I received a box at my house several months later, and it was signed copies of everything Ken had done, including a children's book series, Don't Know Much About History for Kids. And Ken, I tried to get my kids, to read it for the love of reading, which didn't work. And then I tried to make them read it as punishment, which didn't work. But I will say that whenever they have a question, a schoolwork, I tell them, you know where the books are, and they consult that, and it's wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on. I don't know if you heard me say that I was given a wish list of guests, and I only listed four people, and I'm really happy you could be here. I just think that the work you do is not only great from a historical perspective, but it just makes it so much fun for the reader. And if someone wants like the seminal volume on American history, and they want it to be understandable, Don't Know Much About History is as good as it gets, in my humble opinion.
Well, I guess if you have that and Howard Zinn's book, then that would tie it all together.
I'm a great admirer of Howard Zinn, certainly I don't know him, but I consider him one of my literary mentors, so to speak. But the
People's History, that's more of a downer, you know.
Come
I mean, I love the book, but it's a downer. Everything in it's sad. Ken makes history fun. He makes learning an experience.
Hold on, Ken. We got to take a break. We'll start the big conversation when we come back. We're going to be talking to Kenneth Davis here. I Don't Know Much About History series of books, and we're with Mick Foley. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mick Foley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Mark Riley on vacation in England on the phone, the author of Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned, and also Don't Know Much About the Bible and Don't Know Much About the Civil War. It's Kenneth Davis. Ken Davis, as a person who didn't know much about history, and I don't have a real context for history in my own head generally, what is the responsibility of the historian?
Essentially to the truth, as far as I'm concerned, and that's always my guiding principle in writing my books. And for people who aren't familiar with the series, it's basically a question and answer approach. I asked questions about all those things we were supposed to learn back in school and either forgot or never learned in the first place, or they may not have told us the truth about 30 years ago or 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And I do it in a question and answer format. And I ask fairly straightforward questions, you know, like what is manifest destiny and what is the Monroe Doctrine? But occasionally I ask kind of offbeat and quirky questions, too, like why is there a statue of Benedict Arnold's boot, and did Columbus's men really bring syphilis back to Europe?
Well, you better answer them. You better answer those two, because I'm in trouble if you don't.
Okay.
Why is there a statue of Benedict Arnold's boot?
Very briefly, Arnold was, of course, the greatest trader in American history, but before that, he had been a very capable commander of the...
Can I put something in here that might impress somebody out there?
Absolutely.
Is it true that Arnold was injured at the Battle of Saratoga?
That's absolutely correct. And they didn't want to put up a statue to him, so they put up, he was injured in his leg, so they put up a left statue of his boot to mark the spot where that happened.
But had he been killed at the Battle of Saratoga, might not have gone down as a better general than George Washington.
He was, without question, one of the best commanders in the early, and that's one of the reasons he became a traitor. This is where personality and the human side of the story comes into history, and that's what I like to tell. He was a very discontented camper because he felt he had been passed over for promotions and the treasure that often came with victory, while lesser commanders had been promoted above him. So he was very bitter. He had a wife who liked the finer things and was apparently having an affair with a British soldier at the same time. Her name was Peggy Shippen. And so that's the human side of the story. That
wow, if you were elected, you could have become a comic. It sounds like a similar type of bitterness that fuels great comedy.
You either become a comic or a traitor, absolutely.
So he jumped ship because he was pissed off.
That's essentially it. And they promised him money, and they promised him, he was going to be made a general. And then he went on some very serious and destructive raids along the seacoast. So he wasn't just a traitor in name. He was actually commanded against the American rebel forces during the War of Independence. Now, the Columbus story is a kind of old chestnut that's been around since 1496, because there was a tremendous outbreak of syphilis in Italy during a war between the French and the Italians. And after this outbreak of syphilis, they said, well, where did this disease come from? Because it was so virulent. And they said, well, the guys who came back from Columbus must have brought it here from the New World. And for a long time, that really lingered around, that the Indians, the people Columbus misnamed the Indians, had introduced syphilis. But now we know that syphilis predated Columbus in Europe for a long time. There was this particularly virulent, nasty strain of that swept through Europe in the 1500s.
But see, that would be an example of bad history in the terms of blaming the Indians for that, and that becoming
absolutely. And it actually became, I mean, it was a kind of joke. Well, this was the revenge of the Native Americans on the Europeans. But in fact, it's there's no truth to it at all. In fact, disease killed. That was introduced by the Spanish and later the English and French and Dutch and all the other Europeans, killed about 90% of the people that were in the Americas when the Europeans first arrived. And that number may have been as high as 100 million people. So, you know, something like 90 million people were killed by smallpox and diphtheria and malaria, diseases to which those people had no natural immunities, while the Europeans did.
All right, Ken, here you go.
Yeah, I wanted to shift gears just for a second or something I think is pretty important. And don't know much about the Bible, I was really struck by something you mentioned in your preface, saying that you became interested in doing the Bible work when you realized during your Civil War research that people from both sides, Confederate and Union, were using the Bible to justify their positions. Could you maybe expand on that a little bit?
Sure. I've always been interested in the Bible and reading it as history and literature as well as, you know, learning all the Sunday school stories when I was a kid. And it really struck me that this was the first time in America in history, and perhaps in history in general, that the Bible was really used to argue two sides of the same question. And, of course, the question was slavery. For hundreds of years, there was a biblical justification for slavery. It goes back to the idea of one of the sons of Noah being the ancestor of the black races, and because he sins, he's made to be his brother's servant. And that was used as the biblical justification for slavery, because this son of Noah, whose name was Ham, was supposed to be the ancestor of the black races. And that was literally what the theological underpinning of slavery was. And then, of course, there are many references in the Old Testament and New Testament to slavery. So many Christians felt it was not only okay, but it was actually proper and good to have slaves. And they thought they were doing the slaves a favor by Christianizing them. In the early 19th century, in the 1830s and 40s, many Christians start to take a different view, that because of what they had learned as Christians, that this was essentially an unchristian idea, that you can't keep other people in bondage, and you certainly can't treat them the way slaves were being treated. And so this really became a moral issue for many Christians in America. In fact,
right.
In 1840,
yeah.
1845, I guess it was, the Baptist Convention argues over this question, and 40 delegates get up and walk out and go and start their own convention, which is how the Southern Baptists began.
Okay, well, Ken, you know, it's interesting the difference between, you know, belief and history sometimes, and I'm glad you're here. It seems like we could talk for hours, but we got to go. Kenneth Davis is the author of Don't Know Much About the Bible, Don't Know Much About the Civil War, and Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American
Ken,
History.
Ken, thanks so much for being on.
It's my great pleasure. Anytime, guys.
All right. Take
Happy
care.
Happy New Year.
All right.
You
thank
too.
You.
28 past the hour, Air America Radio. We'll be back with the Liberal Confessional.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
We're back, 34 past the hour, Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Nick Foley in for Mark Riley, who is still in England on vacation through the new year. If you don't know who Mick Foley is, he's a three-time World Wrestling Entertainment champion. Right, Mick?
That's correct.
And my new wrestling name, some blog suggestions were the Kvetcher, which I think is good. I still like the self-hater. You know, I'm working on it. I want to switch to some calls before we get into this, because we were going to do it last segment, but we got into it with your buddy Ken, who was going on about history and very informative stuff. It's amazing when you're dealing with huge, like, you know, broad sweeping time periods and ideological stuff like that. There's no way to just, you know.
No, I know. I had a few questions I really wanted to ask, and somehow we got caught up in Benedict Arnold and syphilis.
Yeah.
So you never know what you're going to learn.
I like how he called the biggest syphilis epidemic in the history of the world this little chestnut. Yeah, like, some people don't realize this little chestnut's been around for a while. We're going to do the Liberal Confessional now, and we always like to solicit calls from liberals who are willing and ready to confess for some penance, and we'll do that. 866-303-2270, so you can get that in your head if you're ready to let go of some stuff. And, you know, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. And as I said, if you want to take a turn in the Liberal Confessional, give us a call, 866-303-2270. Right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Foley, for I have sinned.
Tell me, my son, how can I ease your burden?
Well, it's this whole Christmas thing, man.
I see. You feel bad because of how much you hate Christmas.
No, man, I feel bad because how much I don't hate it. I mean, I should dislike Christmas because, well, for one thing, I'm not such a big fan of organized religion, and of course there's always the commercialization and the vulgarity and the fact that our entire winter economy seems to be based on an event that is essentially a work of fiction.
Now, Mark, be mindful of what you say.
Hey, look, man, I'm not putting it down. I love fiction. I read novels, I read short stories all the time. I mean, the best of them have had a profound effect on my life, an impact.
But why shouldn't we just, you know, why shouldn't we celebrate a work of, why shouldn't we celebrate a work of fiction? If they base, if they're based, if they based a whole holiday around Catcher in the Rye, I'd be all into it. You dig what I'm saying? And that would really work because, like Christmas, the whole thing would be based around a martyr. Except in the case of Catcher in the Rye, miss, our martyr would be John Lennon rather than Jesus Christ.
My son, I find it interesting that you began this conversation in defense of Christmas, and yet you're still managing to sound blasphemous.
Look, I know, right? But look, I mean it. I don't mind Christmas at all. The lights, the celebrations, the food, the vacation days, it's all good. I know that as a good secular liberal, I should be trying to take it down with a wrecking ball, but I don't know. I guess I enjoy the tackiness, Mick.
Yes, my son. Like many of your ilk, you can tolerate something only if you put quotes around it. But I am not ashamed to say that I sincerely love all the pageantry of Christmas. I have a huge amount of decorations at my house year-round, and it's a very important time of year for me.
Yeah, I bet your place looks awesome. I bet it's like big garish fun, like a lawn filled with pink flamingos or something.
Mark, in the spirit of the season, I'm going to gently tell you that if you don't stop being ironic about Christmas, I'm going to kick your ass.
All right, fair enough then.
Now, go forth and sin no more.
That was easy penance. you know, Mick, I think thanks for not making me do penance and threatening me to kick my ass, which works. But, you know, a confessional is no fun without penance. So if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, give us a call, 866-303-2270, 866-2270. We've already got some coming in. Here we go.
Hey.
Bob? What? What's
you
the number?
The three numbers.
I did.
866-2270.
All right. How about 866-303-2270? How many times do I got to say it? Here you go. It's 866 and some numbers. You know what I mean? Wing it. Come on. 866-303-2270. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays, Kwanzaa. The rest, all of them. Oh boy. Bob in Miami. What's going on?
How you doing?
All right, man. What do you got to confess, Bob?
I got to confess. My brother-in-law in Alaska ran for governor one time as a Republican, and I donated money.
Oh, my God.
$300.
Oh, my God.
So I wrote him a check.
How long have you been carrying this burden there, Bob?
Oh, for years. 4 years.
Well,
and I received so much Republican hate mail after that. Stop Hillary, everything.
Oh, my God. So you got
I'm now a lifetime member of the NRA.
Oh, what do we got to do? You got to send. You know what? You're gonna have to send $500 to how about to Hillary Clinton? Just send it to her directly.
Well, the only thing that saved my soul was the check bounce.
All right, did your brother-in-law win?
No, he lost.
All right, so your penance is done. The check bounce, he lost. It's probably your fault. You should be thankful.
I see no need for further peasant penance, my son.
I am.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Yeah, that's hilarious. Check bounces and the guy loses. He doesn't need penance. He just wanted to share a good story. That's what he wanted. Hey, John in Colorado, how are you?
Hey, are you there?
Yeah, we're here. What's
okay,
on your mind?
I'm seeing a Republican girl.
Oh yeah,
and I like driving her Suburban.
Oh boy,
and I kind of turn into the neocon, and I say, get in that thing, and I say, let's go smash some liberals in Saturns, which I drive, and she gets a big laugh out of it. But I like it.
So I think you've got a self hatred problem. I think that your desire.
So what you're saying, you're not letting on that you're not Republican.
Oh no, we joke about I wear a hip jacket, peace sign. I'm all into all that stuff, and she's, you know, she's fur coats and diamond rings, and which I don't mind, but I like the Suburban.
All right, so so your penance for enjoying a Suburban, and also I don't know if there penance involved in actually dating a Republican. I don't know. how's everything in the bedroom?
No,
she's a liberal, and I'm just going to make sure she figures it out eventually. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So, do you ever play role playing games where she plays liberal and you play Republican? You do.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, I think maybe that's your penance, is to do some role playing games in the bedroom, and also. What is it? You got any other ideas, Mick?
No, but I'm not sure penance is really needed. I drive a Suburban myself, strictly because I'm on the road a lot. It snows in New York, and the family needs to be safe.
All right. You're not buying that?
All right.
You're not.
All right.
But I did buy a Chevy Impala on my own.
All right. All right. Well, John, you know what you got to do. You know, you want maybe just have sex the wrong way once with her.
You want to hear another one? Maybe worse?
Okay.
Okay. I voter suppressed.
You what?
I did voter suppression.
Oh, how'd you do that? What do you mean?
I take care of my father.
Yeah.
And it was both of our cards for absentee ballots were on the floor, and I threw them away.
That's a different story now.
Because your father's a Republican?
Yes, he is.
Oh, you know, those are the kind of things that you're just going to have to forgive yourself for. You did the right thing.
I know it was in my heart, but you know, he gets it occasionally, but he wouldn't go vote.
No, was he walking around going, "Where's that damn absentee ballot?"
He asked where it was a few times. And I said, I've heard on the news that they're not getting it here in Colorado. I said, we're just going to have to go vote. And he goes, I ain't going out.
I think, yeah. Do you get along with him? Do you have any sort of, you have any problems with your dad?
We don't talk politics.
Well, I think then at just the right time, you should tell him what you did and just laugh. Thanks for calling, John.
Go
you take it. Okay. You bet. We'll keep the calls coming. 866-303-2270. Me and Mick are going to take a break. I feel like I'm a little shoddy on the penance today. We're going to have to get a little harder. And you've got a Suburban. I don't have a car.
You know what? It's 5 years old, and I bought it under the safety thing, and I'm trying to push my wife on a minivan. She's not buying it for a second.
That's always the thing. It's a safety thing. You know, that's what people say. But, you know, it's not so safe for other people.
And
on
I
the
only
road.
Drive it half as much now.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
I'm doing what I can.
I love the way we build rationalization. We'll be back in a second. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here on Air America's Morning Sedition. My guest host today, Mr. Mick Foley, 3-time World Wrestling Entertainment Champion. That's him right over there, sitting right across from me, wrestling fans. We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270. That's all the numbers, Kalo. 866-303-2270. We're taking liberal confessions. We're doling out some penance if we can. Michael, in Madison, Wisconsin, good morning. What do you have on your mind? What is your heart heavy with today?
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I've been feeling really bad lately because I'm just hoping that everything, you know, the economy and just the war in Iraq, everything just goes, you know, nuts.
Yeah.
And everything falls apart, and, you know, it's kind of hard because I don't want to say I told you so, but that's kind of what I'm feeling.
Okay, man. Well, I think that, you know, I have to be honest with you, Michael, and I'm reaching out to you as another person because I can actually hear the sadness in your voice, my friend. There's part of me that wishes that, too, and you know what? In the sense that I think there's part that the Republicans also are trying to bankrupt this country. They're trying to do it on purpose so they will be forced to privatize everything. And I, not unlike you, it's not unusual in response to the elections that we hope that things go really wrong because we don't want this guy to be president because we think he's the wrong guy for the job. Unfortunately, that brings a lot of people down, and there are already people hurting, so I understand what you're saying. I think, you know, your penance, I think, is going to have to be to go out and get out of your house a little bit and maybe do something nice for somebody you don't know.
You mean stop listening to the radio and get a life?
No, I don't want to push you too far into an area you can't really handle yet. There's no reason to get a life yet. I think that maybe this afternoon, maybe you should just get out of yourself for a second and just do something nice for somebody you don't know and see how that makes you feel.
It's pretty cold out, so we'll see.
All right, well, you know what? Do you have a gun in the house, Michael?
No, I don't.
I'm kidding, man. Try to at least get out to refill your prescription.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Nice talking to you. I hope he's okay. Oh, man. Sometimes I say things that I'm not so happy about. Jordan in Delray Beach. Good morning, Jordan.
Morning, gentlemen. It's quite the honor to speak with, Mark Maron as always, but Mick Foley, a huge fan. And I was thrilled when I heard your voice on the radio this morning.
Man, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Do you have the action figure?
I don't know if I own a Mick Foley action figure, but I do have both of his autobiographies.
Okay,
nice.
Wrestling-related
books.
Oh, that's nice.
And, yeah, and I actually have a photograph with Mick Foley from when I was, gosh, maybe 12 years old.
Oh, man. I tell you, I meet adults all the time.
How's that feel, old man?
I grew up watching you, and they'll whip out a picture when they were like 10. I forget, you know, I'm closing in on 40. I still feel relatively young.
Closing in on 40. Yeah, right.
Apart, Mick.
So what's going on, Jordan?
Well, my confession is a little more lighthearted than these other ones, and I feel it kind of pales in comparison. But while I was at lunch about a month ago with two of my bosses, they started talking about Meet the Parents and how funny it was. And I just started kind of nodding along, and I thought I could just kind of get through it. And then they started discussing specific scenes, and I pretended that I had seen it, and I tried to chuckle when I thought it was appropriate. And I've never seen the movie, and I don't want to see the movie, but now I feel like I need to, not only do I need to see Meet the Parents, but I need to also see Meet the Fockers.
Yeah.
So I've got like this awful, I guess you could call it a date with my wife lined up where we're going to rent Meet the Parents one night and go see Meet the Fockers the next day.
Right, just to cover up a lie.
Yeah, I feel dirty.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It sounds to me like you've already, your penance is already there. You got to see both movies now just because you couldn't say I didn't see the movie.
Actually, you know what? Wait
what?
A second. You know, you can buy the DVD of Meet the Parents, and it comes with a free movie ticket to see Meet the Fockers.
I know.
that's our board op, Caleb, the genius behind the knob. So I think it seems to me that you've got your penance cut out for you.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but I'll make it through it, guys.
Yeah, watch both movies. And then, you know, go back to your boss and then, you know, try and pretend like you enjoyed it even more.
You know, Mark, I think there's a deeper issue as to why Jordan felt like he had to lie about seeing Meet the Parents.
What's that?
I think there are deeper issues here. Jordan, why did you feel like you had to lie about seeing Meet the Parents?
You know, it was just the easy way out. And, you know, I try to, you know, be buddy-buddy, and I like when they buy me lunch. And I'm just a weak man, Mick.
Yeah, you're going to... Oh, my God. Now you're going to have to deal with your whole butt-kissing problem on top of everything else. Man, Nick's right. I think you might have to go out and get your butt kicked. How's that? Is that for good
for
penance?
That's good penance.
Every Tuesday, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 4-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is, of course, war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Thank you, Samson and Delilah. Dateline, UN Conference on Climate, Buenos Aires. The ideal natural port for 16th century sailing ships. Bypassed by Ferdinand Magellan in 1520. Because even an ornery Portuguese midget who ate rancid biscuits, believed in sea dragons, and caused 3 mutinies, knew better than to associate himself with the future home of 3,000 Nazis and the inspiration for Madonna's weird tribute to Eva Peron. December 28th. The Bush War on Brains took an interesting turn this week, which can only be communicated through the use of subtle allegory. Mark, imagine yourself a young buffalo roaming the great grassy plains of Kansas. As you playfully transfer regurgitated cellulose fibers from your reticulum into the last 2 chambers of your stomach and ultimately your small intestine, you and your mommy chance upon an iron horse, billowing great clouds of steam and smoke. Seated inside, hundreds of tourists draw their muskets and repeating rifles, sending a rain of lead into your bovine compatriots.
Oh,
one by one, your bison friends slam to the ground faster than Kirstie Alley slipping on a piece of cheese. Then a shotgun turns its deadly sights towards your family. It misfires. You flee. You and your family are spared. For now. You may ask, what the hell has this got to do with the Kyoto Protocols? Well, I'll tell you, you pompitudinous iguanodons. This week, all creatures, great and small, dodged a similar bullet when Saudi Arabia and Australia rejected America's rejection of the Kyoto Treaty. Why, the Saudis even went so far as to approve the treaty. That's right. Even a dictatorship has more good common sense than George W. Bush and company. But what else can we expect from a Republican whose main contribution to rational environmental discourse is to ban the phrase climate change in favor of the phrase climate variability? Huh? Shameful. Ignominious. Yes, never leaving your crucifix-lined anti-radiation bunker, selling your prettiest daughter to the fat guy next door for water, and eating Soylent Green are the ingredients of George W. Bush's vision of the future. His Xanadu.
So Mort, how do you think this whole Kyoto thing will turn out?
I don't know, Mark. You have any daughters?
No.
Then I guess you're going to die of thirst in a crucifix-lined anti-radiation bunker. Now, if I may return to my subtle allegory. They're going to kill us all. Run, Bicey, run. Run. Be free. Be free. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks, Mort.
Hey, you're welcome.
That was an interesting little journey through history, I found.
Yeah, and it got absolutely no laughs as well.
What are you talking about? I laughed. What is it? What's it all about? It laughter with you, Mort? I thought you were a journalist.
That's stunk on ice. I don't know what's going on with me. I think I lost it.
You didn't lose it, man. You look great.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe
you come on to me again?
No, I'm not. Dude, you just try to have a good day. It's not always about laughter.
Well, that's obvious.
Oh, I walked right into that one.
Hey-oh.
Yeah, that's great, man. You ought to think about getting transplants.
Wait a minute. I am not balding.
All right, whatever.
Not in that area. Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
These are the jokes. Yeah, you got to go, man?
I've got better things to do. I got to pack some stuff up into a cardboard box.
Well, you did a great job today. It's nice seeing you.
Whatever.
Yeah, all right. Oh, man.
I was laughing silently.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
Patronize me.
Watch it, man. No one knows what that guy's
capable
of.
It's like the wrestlers when they leave after getting no reaction, they claim they had that silent heat.
Oh, man.
Silent heat.
We're going to come back with your confession about an experience you had with Donald Rumsfeld's wife. I'm going to leave it there. We're going to hear that. We got Rick Harris coming after the top of the hour. We're going to talk about Newt Gingrich's little piece on Rumsfeld, this delusional piece he wrote for a Dakota paper, I think, wasn't it? Okay, we'll be back after this. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, latent haters, the narrow-minded, self-righteous, man-children, women, girls, ineffectual intellectuals, festering progressives, wrestling fans. Good morning, Mick Foley.
It's great to be here.
You see how that list keeps getting bigger sometimes? Why did I just crumple it up? I got this habit of crumpling things. Oh, man. So my guest host today, 3-time World Wrestling Entertainment champion and 2-time New York Times bestselling author. His recent book is a children's book, Tales from Rescal Lane, and his book, Titan Brown, is available in paperback now at Morning Sedition.
And I'll have you know that it's the book, the paperback's getting rave reviews.
From
German.
Oh, the Germans.
Better. It was translated into German, and it's apparently getting better reviews in Germany than it did here.
The Germans like Mick Foley's book in paperback. My book, The Jerusalem Syndrome, available at morningsedition.com, is a classic. It's a collector's only kind of thing. It's out of print, but there's still some left. I think you can get them at Amazon for $2 used. I'm kidding. See, this is my self-hatred. You can get signed ones for $3 at Amazon. No, it's a fine book. I just gave it as a Christmas gift to everyone, because I have boxes of them. Boxes, Kalo. So this has been a pretty exciting show. I've learned a little bit about wrestling. We're going to talk more about wrestling tomorrow, because hopefully we're going to get to some of that stuff that you did that caused a little
controversy.
Yeah, why don't you explain what happened, then tomorrow, you know, hopefully we'll get it on tape.
Well, WWE was debuting a couple of new Arab-American characters, and they asked me if I wanted to be a part of their actual, you know, live debut. They'd been giving vignettes, and I did what I thought was a moderate patriotic speech, and apparently it offended a lot of people who thought that we were blending fact and fiction and that it was not the most tasteful thing
ever put on our show, and that's saying something.
Well, tomorrow we're going to get tape of that. We're also, I want to talk about how wrestling sort of reflects the chaos in the world symbolically. I think it's kind of interesting. Do a little historical wrestling.
Love to.
You know, I got P.W. McDonald, our producer in there. I got him the Andy Kaufman, I'm from Hollywood, and My Dinner with Blassie on one DVD.
Which leads me to
yes.
My Dinner with Wolfie.
Yeah, isn't that you actually had dinner with defense with Paul Wolfowitz? Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And about a year ago, I was part of a USO gala where WWE was being presented the Legacy of Hope Award because Vince McMahon's a very patriotic guy, and you know, he went over last year to support the troops. And on my own, I've been to Walter Reed several times, and USO really extends their appreciation. Like their version of what I do for the troops is a bigger deal, I think, than what it actually is. Like they really extend their appreciation to me, and they invite me to these important things. Last year at the USO gala, I had a chance to meet Wolfowitz, but went with the "if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all" adage.
Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz is about 3 feet tall.
He's
right?
A little guy. He's a little guy, but a lot of impact. He may be the most influential of all the neocons, and he was the guy really, you know, knocking on Bush's door 2 days after 9/11, saying it was Iraq, Iraq, Iraq.
You're a big guy. You're a wrestler. When you saw the guy, did you think wussy, or did you think he was intimidating?
Well, no, he's not intimidating. I found him, you know, like repugnant. Like I don't like him. He, you know, anyone who's seen Fahrenheit 9/11 knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And well before that, I'd formed my opinion of Wolfowitz.
Yeah.
So this year, I was invited to a groundbreaking ceremony at Walter Reed Hospital. Unfortunately, there's a necessity for a new amputees wing. Walter Reed does an amazing job with these guys, but unfortunately, we've got more and more people losing their limbs over there. So I was at the groundbreaking ceremony. They show me to my seat, and I'm right behind Wolfowitz, and I begin formulating in my head the conversation I'll inevitably have to have, and I realize I can't say, "Hello, it's nice to meet you," because that would make me a hypocrite and a liar,
but
I can't very well say, "How dare you, you're the
architect."
So I say, "All right, what I can say is, hello, Mr. Wolfowitz, how are you? I know the troops appreciate your support." Now, I didn't meet him at the groundbreaking ceremony, but that night we're at a restaurant where an old-time steakhouse has a dinner every Friday night for the injured troops. Started out as a little thing. Now, because of necessity, there's about 125 guys there every Friday. I'm introduced to Mark Bowden, the guy who wrote Black Hawk Down, talking to Mark Bowden. All of a sudden, a hand on my shoulder. It's the proprietor of the restaurant. He says, "I'd like you to meet someone," and standing in front of me, Paul Wolfowitz.
Mm.
Breath is offensive in beyond.
His breath is offensive?
Breath is offensive beyond description. I find myself saying, "Hello, Mr. Wolfowitz, how are you? I know the troops appreciate your support." Exactly what I formulated in my head. I go back. I'm sitting next to Gary Trudeau, the Doonesbury guy, the Pulitzer Prize winner.
Sure.
Someone comes up to Gary and he says, "Would you like to meet Paul Wolfowitz?" He goes, "I think I'm going to take a pass on that." He goes, "And if he's familiar with my strip, I think he'll take a pass on meeting me." So I go back. I got children's books and shirts. I'm hanging out with the troops. When I turn around, there's Trudeau and Wolfowitz standing up, engaged in conversation, and cameras are flashing around them like it's a big media event.
Oh,
they talk for a few minutes. They sit down, and I said, "Man, how did that go?" And I had shared with him my meeting, and he goes, "Well, I took your advice. I just stuck to the..." And my friend, I drove there with a friend of mine, and he was on the way home. He was talking about just how bizarre that was to actually hear Gary Trudeau, the Pulitzer Prize winner, telling his friend, the professional wrestler, "I took your advice."
Yeah.
I said, not only is he taking my advice, what is he taking my advice on how to deal with the first meeting with Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz? So a week later, I get a call from the USO saying, "You've been invited to dinner at the Pentagon." I said, "Oh, that's good." And she goes, "You've been invited by Paul Wolfowitz."
Your new buddy.
And I said, "But I hate that guy. I hate maybe too strong a word. I hate..." And she goes, I know how you feel about him, but it's a very important meeting, dinner. All the chiefs of staff will be there, and you were invited by name." So I went to the dinner. I dressed up in the suit.
Dude, wait, back up. So wait. Now, first of all, hate, not too strong a word. Second of all, let's get back to the breath problem. So Wolfowitz, as I've read that people, and I have books on this, people with no souls have bad breath. It's apparently pretty common. Yeah. Now, the other thing is that you're invited by Wolfowitz. All right, and there's no way you can turn this down. Now, see, I'm starting to, like, you know, you're a tough guy. You've got a point of view. You're
right,
a wrestler,
right.
But you could have said no.
Well, you know what? I thought to say no. I consulted my dad, who's one of those old time, what happened to my party, Eisenhower Republicans,
yeah.
You know, who really. It wasn't anyone but Bush guy, and he said, "You know, Mick, he says it's possible to respect the office without respecting, you know,
wait,
the
office
guy
of the secretary, you know, deputy secretary of defense."
Yeah. Well, I also mentioned to him that I supposedly received an invite to dine at the West Wing by the president's personal chef. I mean, it's bizarre that I'm thrown into this world where I'm sitting with 4 3-star generals. It's like a surreal world, and I really enjoy hanging out with these guys.
Yeah.
But I'm terrified that one of them's going to turn on Air America and hear me, bad mouthing.
Now, I don't think you're a good guy. You're a nice guy. You have a high profile in a certain world of entertainment.
Certain
Why
world.
Are they asking you? Why do you think that
you
they might?
Well, because the troops genuinely, they like me, and a lot of the guys are drawn, you know, are big fans of the show, and apparently when I go there, it helps out the troops, and they consider me a friend, I think more far above and beyond they would like a supermodel who shows up or
an actor. In a way, you're sort of like, it's... They want. They're basically having you over to say, "Hey, how do you talk to those guys? You know, we've been trying to talk to them, but they don't trust us. We got them into this pickle, and you know, and we're the evil bastards that put us all there. How do you? We want to be friends."
You know what?
With
whenever
you.
Whenever I hear that Wolfowitz was in there, and it's surreal to me to look at the walls and sometimes see the Polaroid pictures that are up there, and they'll have one guy had 3 pictures on his wall: President Bush, Tyra Banks, and me.
Yeah.
And so I'll ask the guys about, you know, who's visited you. And every time they say Wolfowitz, I'll say, "So what was he like?" And I'm always waiting to hear the dirt.
Yeah.
And nobody's saying anything but positive things about the guy. I don't know if they agree with his principles. Every time I meet him, you don't get any better than that. What a nice guy. And he just strikes me as just such a creepy guy. You know, all I see when I picture Wolfowitz is him and that damn comb in his mouth.
I just wonder about, you know, the type of information people have, whether people really know, you know, what part he played, whether even I know the whole story. I mean, because in my head, like, you know, I couldn't even understand, you know, how you would even take that invitation, even as a celebrity. But, you know, well, I want to talk about Rumsfeld, because you've got a story and a confession about
Donald Rumsfeld. I do have a shocking confession.
But we'll do it after
the break. But I wanted you to see this visual aid. This is the apex of my life, appearing on the front cover of Stars and Stripes, the military newspaper, with Paul Wolfowitz.
Yeah,
different pictures, though. Different pictures.
And look, and you shaved for that. But today you didn't. You know, all right. We'll be back in a second. It's 16 past the hour here on
Air
America.
And I'd like some feedback. Did I do the right thing? Did I do the wrong thing?
All right, we'll see.
I want some opinions on this thing.
Yeah, let us know. Okay? You can do it on the blog or email, sedition@airamericaradio.com, or call us if you want to talk to Mick, 866-303-2270. We'll be back in a second.
And now, haiku from professional wrestler Mick Foley.
I hate Dick Cheney. He must taste Mr. Sacco. His heart's a machine.
This has been Morning Sedition Haiku with Mick Foley.
Anyways, here's the palm file for today, which was brought to us by Raymond, who is wearing a Russian military hat. It's Victor Yushchenko's palm pilot for this today. 6 a.m., wake up. Have dog taste breakfast. 6:30 a.m. Bury dog. You see, because it was poison. 7 a.m. Yes. 7 a.m. Make own breakfast. 8 a.m. Call Putin. Assure him that despite our differences, the Ukraine will always be ready to help Russia screw Muslims out of their oil. 9 a.m. Watch Scarface DVD again to get management tips. Kapow! 11 a.m., field calls from Russian film directors asking me to become the Ukrainian Bill Murray. Note the early funny Bill Murray. All right. Don't even do that. I know you wrestlers can take
it's your it. Reaction to the lack of response that I'm laughing at, not the actual, not the actual statement.
Okay. 12 noon, first order of corruption. Take part in lucrative ad campaign for chemical industry. Dioxin. You'll get cancer, but you may become president. Yeah. Oh, no, I have one of those. Wait a minute. I have one. Do I? I used to. Yeah. Oh, yeah, here. How late was that? That was probably the latest rim shot ever in radio history. 1 p.m., appoint security czar. No, not an expression. He will be an actual czar. Because it's Russia. 2 p.m., pay off Russian mob to thank them for only half killing me. 8 p.m., go out, forage for roots and nuts. Drink only spring water. Trust no one. All right. Thank you very much.
That's good.
Yeah, all right.
Good stuff.
All right. You know what? I made a mistake. Let's hear your confession, Nick. Let's hear it. What do you have to say about that? I know that you had something on your mind we didn't get to.
It has been on my mind, and you've been calling yourself the self-loather, but I think it may apply to me as well.
I am the self-hater, Mick.
Self-hater. Yeah. I'll be the self-loather. Okay. We'll be a tag team.
Crying,
listen,
man.
While I was at the Pentagon, something happened that I feel remorseful about.
Okay, let it out.
I was introduced to a lady.
Yeah.
As she told me she was Donald Rumsfeld's wife.
Yeah.
And I not only signed a children's book to the Rumsfelds, but I accepted her invitation to have a private tour of Mr. Rumsfeld's office.
Oh, Nick.
I listened to her story about her first date with Donald. And this is where it gets painful.
Oh, man.
I not only enjoyed the tour, I found her story about her first date to be touching. And I liked Mrs. Rumsfeld a lot.
Oh, man. Dude, I don't even know what the penance for that could be. I'm starting to question your
own. I'm so sorry.
I don't even know what the hell to tell you to do. I think what she
She was really nice.
All right, here's your penance. Get out. Get out. You can never be on Air America again. Unbelievable.
She was so polite.
You're a sucker. Here, let's do it. You're a sucker. You really are, Mick. I'm surprised. You're having dinner with Wolfowitz. You're flirting with Mrs. Rumsfeld. You know, in his office behind his back, apparently.
He had a beautiful picture of him and Hamid Karzai.
Oh, yeah. That's a beautiful relationship there. Just nothing but justice and freedom there. Well, here, let's talk about your buddy. Let's talk about your buddy, Rumsfeld.
Watch what you say about him.
Yeah, believe me. I deal with that every day. I go home and I wonder.
College wrestler.
Yeah, really?
Tough guy.
Well, maybe you should take him
down. We call him a shooter.
Yeah, what's that? What does that mean?
That means you know how to wrestle for real. Unlike me.
Well, here, Newt Gingrich wrote a piece. It's for the Baltimore Sun, not the Dakota paper that I was...
not a bad guy either, that Gingrich.
Come on!
Nah, I'm kidding about that one.
What are you, crazy? How can you like your historian friend and not...
I despise Gingrich.
These lying revisionist idiots. We have 90 seconds to do this. Did you, that we just said in my head, P.W. McDonald? Well, look, Gingrich wrote a piece about Rumsfeld, you know, saying that he was basically the greatest Secretary of Defense that ever lived. All right, and clearly it's not true. And they do this. The Republicans will find people that owe them favors who are willing, you know, old guys, they'll pull them out of the closet like Bob Dole or Newt Gingrich and say, can you do something? Do a fluff piece on Donnie. Well, here's it. Claim number one. Mr. Rumsfeld took control and led the remarkably successful campaign in Afghanistan, which led in short order to the defeat of the Taliban and the destruction of its terrorist training camps. That was claim number one from the Gingrich piece. Now, here's the points that say no. More coalition and Afghan government soldiers and aid workers have died this year than in each of the previous 2 years. The opium trade is out of control, fueling lawlessness and financing terrorists. In 2003, opium brought in $2.3 billion. This year, opium production is expected to increase by 50 to 100%. Kabul's Supreme Court, the only other branch of government, is controlled by Islamic fundamentalists. And finally, Afghanistan is not a free country. The nation remains under U.S. occupation with 20,000 U.S. and allied troops and a NATO-led international security assistance force of 7,000 troops based in Kabul. Claim two, because of Mr. Rumsfeld's successful plan, our military is more flexible, more agile, and better able to fight unconventional enemies. Even today, 21 months after we invaded Iraq, only 25% of the Army's Humvees are fully armored. That's just to say a little of the falseness of this piece of Gingrich's garbage. We'll be back with Rick Harris, some more of the Gingrich piece, and more of the rebuttals after this. Comedian Rick Harris, Nick Foley's here. We got a lot of things going on this last
half
hour.
I'm so sorry, Mark.
It's all right. 20 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Very sorry.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
44 past the hour. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio with Mick Foley, who has been my guest host all morning. My guest co-host, Mark Riley, in England on vacation until early next week. We are telling people if they want to help the victims of the tsunami in Asia, you can go to the links page on morningsedition.com. We have some links up. I'm sure we'll be getting more links. It's an awful, awful thing that is happening there. And if you want to help out or try and find out how you can help, hopefully there'll be some information there for you. By the end of the week or maybe on Thursday, I'm hoping to get somebody on the show that can talk about, you know, how that works, distribution of aid, where the aid comes from.
You know, Samantha Power might be able to shed some light on that. She's going to be our guest. She's
tomorrow.
Going to talk about genocide, but she deals with all types of international crises.
Yeah, apparently the American Bush administration has responded by attacking Syria. They've pledged $15 million, which seems like nothing.
Well, I'm sure there'll be more.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's the initial thing. I mean, they'll do something, and I believe people around the world will pitch in. But this is a catastrophe of, you know, just incredible proportions.
Now, I was doing this thing on Rumsfeld. This is a Newt Gingrich piece that was in the Baltimore Sun. There's a link to it on our website. And it's basically the title of the piece is "As Defense Chief, Rumsfeld is a Successor." Several points that Gingrich makes that are ludicrous. This is the fourth one. Did I do the third one? I didn't. Here's the claim number three. Rumsfeld was able to move military personnel out of jobs that should be and are now held by civilians, making a draft unnecessary despite some critics' claims that one was imminent. Rumsfeld has, in fact, implemented a backdoor draft by expanding the stop-loss program, which prevents troops from leaving the armed forces after their contracts have expired. Rumsfeld insisted that a smaller, quicker force could do the job in Iraq when General Eric Shinseki said that several hundred thousand troops would be needed in Iraq. He was rebuked by Rumsfeld as being far from the mark. Turns out he was the guy that was right, you know, in retrospect. Right, Mick?
Exactly, and may I add to that my friend Mr. Wolfowitz claimed that it would be hard to imagine needing more troops to secure the peace than were needed to win the war. Hard to imagine. It turns out that Wolfowitz was wrong on that one as well.
Yeah, well, this is your buddy. I know, you know, this has got to be eating you up. You know, let's bring Rick Harris, my comedian friend Rick Harris. Is, how are you, Rick?
I'm wonderful, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
Nice to have you on this coast. I know that your L.A. chewed you up, spit you out, and delivered you right back here.
No, actually chewed me up, spit me out, and then actually passed me through the intestines.
Oh, so you're in New Jersey.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So, now, I know that you have something. You're sitting there kind of seething about the Iraq war situation.
Oh, can Rick just verify the authenticity of this
photograph? He loves this picture. This is the picture.
It's not a picture of me with Wolfowitz, but I am on the same page.
Are you the bald guy in the wheelchair?
That was a wrestling gag. He's the shaved guy. Apparently the guy who thought it was nice to shave for Wolfowitz. But
put on a jacket.
Today he comes in his pajamas.
Did you check your food for dioxin after eating with him?
Yeah. May I say, after being in Iraq, that Halliburton's doing a tremendous job with the food.
We should let them over here.
They're doing tremendous. Did you know that
I know they're running up huge bills.
The plate of mashed potatoes and turkey weight costs $7,000. It's more expensive food than they had at that party for the Homeland Security Department.
My wife said she wanted a $200 dinner, so I gave her an MRI from Iraq.
So what do you got to what do you think about the whole thing right now, there, Rick?
I think the war's wrong.
Oh, well, good for you.
Yeah, that's
you're in the right place. Well, thanks for sharing.
So, anyway, thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Hilarious, genius, funny.
Thank you. Very much. I can't wait to go into Iran, and I hope they institute the draft.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I haven't seen Canada in 2 years.
Are you old enough still?
I'm 29.
Wow,
could I still be drafted?
Out. Yeah, yeah. And I know they're listening. Rick Harris is his name. He's in New Jersey with nothing to do.
Yeah, and I'm exactly the guy you want. Just drug test me.
Drug test him and then send him over there. You'd be the crying Jew on the battlefield in Iraq.
I wouldn't be shooting, but I could probably dig a trench about the second I got over there.
You could be one of those guys that says, go over there. Yeah, go ahead. That's where you need to go. I'll be back here.
I'd just be screaming, cover me, in the mess tent.
You know, it's sad.
Yeah, exactly.
You do need to. Here's claim number five from the Gingrich piece. The combined effort has resulted in three-fourths of Al-Qaeda's senior leadership being killed or captured, while the organization's mastermind, Osama bin Laden, remains a powerless international fugitive. Now, wait, just... On the surface today, Bin Laden has announced that he's aligning himself with al-Zarqawi, and Zarqawi is his guy in Iraq. There's a statement that might be Bin Laden on the news today, yet Gingrich says, a powerless international fugitive. And here's some of it. The figure of three-fourths, this is a 75% number, of al-Qaeda's leadership being captured, is a number that is totally unsubstantiated. I mean, the number quoted had been one-half, and then right before the Republican convention, right-wingers magically bumped the number up to 75% with no explanation how or why. Now,
62%.
Yeah, but where did they get the number of what? They don't even know.
If you're going to make something up, make up something big. 110%.
Yeah, we got all of them. And then some. Yeah. We've got people that were thinking about being terrorists.
We recruited two guys and shot them in the head.
Yeah. Finally, here's we go. Claim number six. Finally, there's the question of Iraq. The military performed brilliantly in the 23-day campaign led by General Tommy Franks that defeated the dangerous Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein.
What do you mean defeated? They just showed up. There was no army.
Right. Despite Bush declaring a mission accomplished in Iraq on May 1st, 2003, aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln, April 2004 was the single deadliest month during the occupation. November 2004 was the second deadliest month. Now, Mick, you're with these guys. They know that. You know, they know that, you know, that you have a president that declared victory. You have a guy, the ex-Speaker of the House here, who's saying that, you know, it was a success. I mean, I don't know how they qualify this stuff, but I got to imagine that those guys that you talk to, the reason their morale is high is because they are insulated among themselves, and they say, whatever happens here, we're going to stick together, we're going to do this job, despite whatever press or propaganda is being put out over here.
Well, I think they, at least when I was there, they focus on the positives, and there are positives taking place. I think if they were to, you know, talk amongst themselves or admit to themselves that, you know, that they were there for less than noble reasons, it would make their stay there, you know, intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they have doubts. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of soldiers who'd been injured, and a lot of them are still very much supportive of the effort. And when I walk into a soldier's room, or in this case, I'm thinking of a Marine's room, and he's got, you know, the flag neatly folded, and he's got a couple of Oliver North books on tape, I know I'm probably not going to press this guy for much information.
that's not right.
You know, but there are other people. There was a young lady who lost her arm over there, and she had been outspoken in her criticism about the war. And I asked her if she received any flack, and she says, you know what, I really don't care. As far as I'm concerned, I've earned the right to speak out and speak my mind, and I don't care, you know, what people think of that. They are pretty open. You know, I always have a military escort when I go to the hospital, but they allow me to ask my questions, and I've met people, you know, who've consoled in me. And I've seen something that really bothered me right around the time when the president was talking about not sending mixed messages. I visited Walter Reed, met a soldier who had who'd been shot in both arms,
mm-hmm.
may eventually lose the loss of both those arms. When I came home, it's about a 6-hour drive from D.C. to Long Island. I got home, and there was a Newsday on my kitchen table, and it was that soldier. It was a story about Landstuhl, Germany, where he had been before going to Walter Reed. And it was a story partially about how his wife had to spend their entire savings to get out to Germany. And my feeling was, you know, if you don't want to send mixed messages to the troops, then don't make it so difficult to get to their loved ones in times of need. And in many cases, you know, I've talked to families who've had to spend the night in garages, mm-hmm. or in their car, because when they get there to see their sons or their daughters, there's no accommodations for them. So
how could they not be bitter about that? You know, it's unbelievable when I hear those stories, even about the equipment and all that stuff, that you got guys bringing their own equipment, and that they're still sort of, a lot of them are still loyal to this administration, this president, without, you know, really, you know, being...
Well, that's why I'm really interested tomorrow to talk to the guy from Operation Truth, because I believe he's going to have a whole different side to it. I do hear some dissension, but not nearly as much as you might expect.
Well, they're loyal to their own, to themselves. They're loyal to their buddies, like every war. I mean, they don't know what they're doing over there. Their mothers are knitting them flak jackets. But
one of the amazing things I see is the first few times I went to visit the troops in the hospital, and I'd say, hey, I bet you're happy to be home. They'd be like, oh, I just wish I was back there with my guys. I thought, this is a put-on. Nobody can actually be this way. These guys, I mean, they're just loyal to their country in a way that I, you know, can't even imagine.
But also the type of friendships and bonds that you must make those situations.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the real deal. You know what I mean? I mean, I've got some close friends, but I think in a pinch they'd be like, hey, dude, I got to go. But those guys are friends forever.
And that's why I really want to talk to the Op Truth guy, because I'm concerned about the fact that a lot of people genuinely are, you know, supportive of the troops in words. But these guys are going to need our help, you know, for decades to come, because they're seeing some bad things. They're seeing their friends die. And taking the life of anyone, whether it's an enemy combatant or an innocent civilian, has got to be traumatic. It's been proven to be traumatic. So I hope that this country remains behind these guys long after this war on terror is over, if indeed it ever ends.
All right, I'm not going to put you in a position to be funny right now, Rick, because it's a deep moment. We're going to come back with Rick Harris and Mick Foley.
I'm ruining the show. What are you talking about? I'm going to dinner with Wolfowitz. I'm bringing down the tone.
Hey, you know what? Maybe
I'm crying over here. I hate myself.
We're going to come back and we're going to wrestle. All right, it worked once before. We're going to do it again. We got Rick Harris. We got Mick Foley. We got the liberal agenda coming up. It's 44 past the hour. Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if morning sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Dum 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 dum.
All right, here we go. It's land this thing. It's 49 past the hour. I am Mark Maron. That's Mick Foley, comedian Rick Harris in from New Jersey.
Howdy. Saying that.
I can't help it, man. I first met Rick Harris, I think it was at the Montreal, was it Aspen Comedy Festival?
Yep.
You were all full of the beans, man.
I was a young tyke. I was full of red wine and amphetamines. And you were telling Sam Kinison stories and trying to tell me, don't do this.
Yeah.
You're going down the wrong path.
And who was right?
And I thought you were a schmuck.
Yes. And it turns out that I may be a schmuck, but I was right.
And now you've got a radio show and I still smell of rehab.
Good for you, though. George Carlin's going in.
Everything's good. Yeah, he's on the Limbaugh diet.
Yeah, the Limbaugh diet.
Yes.
What is that?
Oh, Vicodin red wine and lies. And Coulter's panties.
Nice.
Somebody hold my chins back while I throw up. Sleep before you get it out of your bus. Well, all I see is one large man in front of me, Mike Jim Mankind. Just a large, fluffy Jew.
I've never been called a large, fluffy Jew.
I combined them up.
I'm named Foley.
Do you think Rush is going to get sober, or you think he's going to stay sober?
No, he can't possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to have a higher power, and his higher power is OxyContin and fudge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not going to happen.
So I was talking to Mick earlier. I was in Disneyland. Last week, my wife likes Disneyland.
You're a Disney kind of guy.
I'm not really, right? But, you know, I went to the Christmas version of It's a Small World. I enjoy It's a Small World.
Sure, I do, too.
I didn't mind the lights. They had the little Disney Christmas parade. And there was a time where I would have completely condescended to it. But, you know, I just mildly did. Like, the whole Christmas thing, the holiday thing, is not it's not bothering me as much as I thought it would.
I love the holidays.
Do you really?
I really do. Yeah. I love the holidays. Not a Hanukkah Kwanzaa, the real holiday, Christmas.
Come on.
The other one there. I am a Jew, and we don't do Hanukkah because Hanukkah sucks.
Really?
All Jews know this.
Really?
Hanukkah, it is a pretender to the throne.
Oh, wow.
It is the Dennis Hastert of holidays.
No, wait, let me just ask you this. If this was me saying that,
I'd say nothing.
So
I'm terrified.
No, but I mean, in general, if I was saying Hanukkah was a pretender to the throne,
you're like a mountain
trouble.
With a goatee. Why would I say anything?
Only we can hate us.
Hanukkah sucks. Hanukkah, it just sucks. Christmas is a good holiday. It's got songs. Hanukkah has, Adam Sandler who made something up 5 minutes
dreidel,
before.
Yeah. I made it out of...
Yeah, we all thought our mother made up in a night of white wine debauchery.
I disagree. Because
Hanukkah, sorry.
Yeah. Not only was I invited to Stevie Wexler's bar mitzvah, but I was also invited to
Paul Wolfowitz's bar mitzvah.
No. No, we're not there yet.
The Wolfowitz family.
And I enjoyed Hanukkah.
You're going to be performing at the Wolfowitz bar mitzvah. That's right.
Ashcroft will be singing at the Wolfowitz bar mitzvah.
Oh,
what?
He does.
I've heard him sing when the eagle flies.
But the Hanukkah thing, here's the deal. Let's be honest. Because I grew up with Hanukkah. I grew up lighting candles. I grew up a conservative Jewish person.
Uh-huh.
And I think that what you...
Now you're neither.
No, now I'm not much of anything. But I still understand. You know, I understand why ritual is important and why belief is important. But I think the one thing that if I were to compare the two, it's the same as, like, you know, when you go to a synagogue gift shop. There's a theme there. There's, you know, it's a lot of Jerusalem stone. It's all very predictable. It's all very sort of like it's not as exciting as Christmas. Is that it's all you're saying?
There's no zazz.
That's right. The zazz.
The gazinga. The little, you know, we don't have a guy.
Yeah.
We don't have a color.
You have the Maccabees, the story.
The Maccabee. Who knows? It's like a department store in Vermont. Maccabees.
You have a very powerful lamp that did an amazing thing, 8 days with the oil.
You have some sort of torch. No one knows.
No one knows
the story.
And we're missing the red. There's no red and jinglings and bells and tinsels and fruitcakes and all that kind of stuff. You love that stuff, right, Nick?
Love it.
Really?
I have a Christmas room that stays that way year-round.
Whoa.
Who are you? What?
I do, yeah.
That's psychotic.
What did you say? Who are you? What?
Elvis?
Yeah, that is sort of an Elvisy kind of thing.
I have a Christmas room.
What's
man?
In the Christmas room?
Man,
okay, you have too much house.
I'll
you
tell you what.
Christmas
back
room.
To the millionaire experience. I happened to mention the Christmas room, and or Regis mentioned it. He'd heard about it. I said, "Yeah, I've got a collection of."
You got a Christmas room.
I said, Anna Lee, I didn't call them dolls. I called them mobility figures. But they're dolls. They're glorified dolls. And the Anna Lee people got a hold of WWE and started sending me stuff. So I got quite a collection. I actually went to their factory, and I'm like, was met with a hero's welcome.
Nick, excuse me. You're just getting us off the topic. You have a Christmas room?
Yeah.
No, wait. He's not off topic. And dolls. He's got a Christmas room and a doll obsession.
With the 30-inch Anna Lee pose. Action.
Now you're trying to tell them they have to go off for today. This is an hour and a half.
Now you're trying to sort of justify, like, no, these are a certain type of dog.
Hey, this is for you to do your material. You want to know about the Christmas? I want to be Santa Claus. I've said it publicly. I've got an agreement with Santa's Village in Jefferson, New Hampshire. 10 years from now, I need to learn to speak French. I'm going to wait until the heat's off the French a little bit because they're up there in the mountains near Canada, and I'm going to be their guy in 10 years.
See, now again, maybe you can tour with Wolfowitz and the doll to France.
Well, Wolfowitz does look like the elf who wanted to be a dentist.
I don't remember. Well, the elf who wanted to be a dentist wouldn't have the bad breath.
That's true.
I'd mention Wolfowitz's breath was appalling,
and he wouldn't have this sort of strange fascist vision for the world. But maybe that isn't true. Maybe Santa does have sort of a global agenda, a manifest destiny. No? Maybe?
No, I don't think so.
What, did I just kill the whole segment? What just happened? Did I just dig us into a hole? Hey, if they're sending Mick Foley dolls, I want some Dysons at my house. I want Dyson vacuum cleaners. I want three of them.
The vacuum?
I bought a Dyson.
Does it work?
What, are you kidding me? It's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
And it's got an English accent.
Yeah.
I was vacuuming one weekend.
I can't even do a sucking sound in it. Yeah, yeah. But, no, it's an amazing thing. And someone wrote an email to me saying that they went out and bought one because I talked about it. Right? Yeah. Am I getting any kickback? Am I getting anything from Dyson?
Nothing.
No. I just got the joy of buying one. And I'd be honest with you. When you vacuum with these things, you really feel like you're doing something. I mean, really. Like, in that, I got a lot of free time. You know what it's like as a comic. To sit there in the laundromat and go, wow, look, they're drying, for an hour and a half.
Open the door every 5 minutes to check the progress.
Yeah, I'm really working here.
Now it's just damp.
The Dyson, you can see it filled with dirt. Yeah. There's nothing more satisfying than turning it on and going, wow, look at all that dirt.
So you're not a Roomba man?
No. What is that?
The Roomba is
robot. I don't have the robot. No. I like it being, I'm a manual guy. Like
you don't want the robot?
Am I losing you, Mick?
A little bit on the manual robot vacuum cleaner.
You don't know what a Dyson is?
I know.
Wow. I was vacuuming at home one weekend.
All right, we got to go. Here we go. This is a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. One, with detachment and honesty, review the events of 2004, then take a Vicodin with a big glass of Chardonnay. Not you.
No, Rick. Never.
All right, two, criticize movie of the Phantom of the Opera for being insufficiently gay. Three, pitch action reality show set in Iraq called Pimp My Dangerously Unprotected Humvee. Four, before dumping Christmas tree onto the sidewalk, tell it, look, it's not you, it's me. Five, today's phrase, just dropping the conversation. You know where all the tinsel goes, man? Straight into the ocean. It's a total dolphin killer. Wake up, man. How clear does it have to be? Thank you, Rick Harris, for coming. Thank you, Mick Foley. You're going to be here tomorrow, though. He's going to be our guest host tomorrow. Paul Rykoff, Executive Director of Operation Truth. Samantha Power, human rights expert. And Anthony LaFay from Guerrilla News Network. All that tomorrow on Morning Sedition. This has been Air America Radio. Have a good day.
Sedition.
Sedition on Air America Radio.